And by the way, despite FEMA's shortfall, Wall Street is happy today. Stocks rising after Irene's bark and bite were less than anticipated, but still, as we said, a lot of damage. And at one point, Vermont considered purposefully flooding the entire state capital of Montpelier. Officials there worried that record levels in the Marshfield Reservoir threatened the integrity of the Marshfield Dam, and so they wanted to release water into the Winooski River, which is already swollen by spring rains. Thankfully, they didn't do that. Montpelier got a reprieve, unlike, say, New Orleans. Today is also the sixth anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. We know what happened in New Orleans in that event. And our next guest says our infrastructure is as vulnerable now as it was then. Tom O'Rourke teaches engineering at Cornell University. He's an expert on the effects of natural disasters on infrastructure. He was on a national panel studying the effects of Katrina and recently spent time touring tsunami-ravaged northern Japan. He joins us from the studios at Cornell. And Professor, first your thoughts on Vermont. We don't know if that dam is vulnerable, but we just went through the Mississippi River flooding. What are your thoughts about the country's water infrastructure?
The country's water infrastructure is aging like our infrastructure and transportation and other places. And it's under some stress. What we find in Vermont, I think, is an extraordinary amount of rainfall. And you have dams that act as catchment. They have a certain capacity. I happen to have been in the Green Mountains of Vermont just 10 days ago, and it was raining very heavily at the time. And the ground is totally saturated up there. And as a consequence, I'm sure that the reservoirs were pretty high. So you get an event like this, which is a major, major storm in terms of rainfall. I understand that they were getting on the order of 14 inches of rain in the Vermont area. And so all of this catchment comes in, the runoff from the hills comes into the catchment of the reservoir, and the reservoir goes dangerously high, and you really have to decant that water. You really don't want it spilling over the top of the dam or finding other route where it could undermine the stability of the dam. And so they were thinking seriously of releasing water in already swollen rivers because it's the lesser of two evils.
It would have had to have been serious for them to consider flooding the entire capital. And this underscores how some people are, you know, criticizing the response to this, saying it was, you know, much about nothing. But in much of New England, there has been rainfall and ground is saturated, which is why trees fell over, not necessarily because of the power of the hurricane or tropical storm, but because the ground was so wet, they were just so vulnerable. Give us your sense of the reaction to this. You know, as we said, some officials being accused of overhyping, also getting praise. Republican Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey, very complimentary of President Obama's response. You know, first of all, your sense of that.
Well, I think it's extraordinary. As you mentioned, this is the anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. And after Hurricane Katrina, we were criticizing people for not being prepared, which they weren't. And this hurricane, there is some criticism coming forward. It's just the opposite, that people were too precautious. I think when you're looking at an event like Hurricane Irene, and you're 3 or 4 days out when you have to make your critical decisions based on what models are in place, they did an extraordinarily good job. I'd much rather be on the 29th of August after Hurricane Katrina feeling that we may have been a little conservative in making these assessments than feeling that we were a little less conservative than we needed to be.
Well, give us an example, for instance, in New York City, something you saw that was done there that wasn't in New Orleans.
In New York City, they evacuated the low-lying areas. They got people out of harm's way. In New Orleans, they started the process of evacuation late, and it was not fully operational with respect to nursing homes and other locations where we know that, that people were stranded and in great difficulty. In New York City, New York University Hospital was evacuated with the exception of 10 patients who were too sick to be moved. And that's because that hospital sits right next to the East River.
Well, and as you point out, let's stay with New York University Hospital because you're very complimentary of, for instance, the police in New York City pulling some of their vehicles out. In New Orleans, the electric company did pull some vehicles out, but the city didn't. Subway cars were put away safe in New York City just in case. So that kind of response happened. But you mentioned New York University Hospital and compliment them for evacuating. But they had to evacuate because they did the same thing that hospitals in New Orleans did, which was put their generators in the basement?
Yes, their generators are in the basement, and that's not unusual. Lots of buildings and facilities will put their generators in the basement because that is a convenient location. We know that if there is the event of flooding, that's not always the best location. But this is illustrating some of the vulnerabilities that we have with respect to increased natural hazards. And we need to be aware of those increased hazards, and we need to be sensitive to the performance of critical infrastructure and be able to invest and plan for the event of these, let's say, low probability, high consequence events occurring in the future.
Low probability, high consequence. We're going to find out more about that from Tom O'Rourke, a professor of civil and environmental engineering at Cornell University. And as we said, the worst flooding may still be ahead in places like Vermont, where rivers are still to crest. We're just seeing incredible video. We'll post some. Normally narrow ribbons of water in both Vermont and upstate New York have become torrents of water. A young woman looking at a river was swept away earlier today in Vermont. And there's video online also showing a 141-year-old covered bridge in Rockingham, Vermont, being swept away by a river. Another video shows an empty car somersaulting down a river in Bennington. More on the infrastructure this is affecting when we come back Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back. We're talking about how vulnerable our infrastructure is. Hurricane Irene has passed over the East Coast, causing less damage than expected. But our next guest says we got lucky. He says, remember the earthquake in New Zealand that leveled much of the Christchurch back in February? And then, of course, there was the big Tohoku earthquake off Japan a month later, which caused a tsunami that devastated northern coastal Japan and the country's nuclear industry. We're speaking with Cornell University engineering professor Thomas O'Rourke. He's an expert on the effects of natural disasters on infrastructure. So, Tom, you say we got lucky. You talk about needing to be ready for low probability, high consequence events like the ones I just mentioned and a new normal. But after speaking with you, are we even prepared for, you know, moderate events? We talked about generators still being placed in the basements of hospitals, but also in nuclear power plants' basements. Are engineers looking to changing those designs?
Yeah, I think clearly once you're alerted that there is the real possibility of the hazard, that you need to think through the consequences of the hazard, especially for parts of our critical infrastructure such as hospitals, nuclear power plants, critical water supplies, and take steps to avert what would be an unacceptable failure of some of these critical facilities. Even though the possibility of this failure occurring is very small, the fact that it's finite and that it can occur and that it has occurred in this last year. I was going to say that if one viewed the Tohoku earthquake as a sledgehammer, you could look at Christchurch as a hypodermic needle. We have things affecting populations which are both broad and large, like the subduction zone off of Japan, and relatively small and surgical, like the earthquake in Christchurch. And certainly the vulnerability of the eastern seaboard and of the Gulf of Mexico to hurricanes is well known to us now after the consequences of 2005, where we had 28 named storms, 14 of which had become hurricane class. That's an extraordinary number of serious hazards which had developed. And, of course, culminating in Hurricane Katrina, but also having significant other hurricanes such as Hurricane Rita and others that affected the Gulf Coast.
Well, tell us specifically some of the things you're concerned about. For instance, the delivery of electricity. Now, you know, we know pipelines may be underground, but they're powered by electricity. So have we seen any changes since Katrina when the wind blew down electric lines and so things that are delivered by electricity couldn't be delivered?
Well, New York City, of course, has a very reliable electrical distribution system. It's split up into 55 different local distribution networks, each of which can actually operate independently of its neighbor. So if you have an electrical fault or a problem in a neighboring distribution network, it doesn't necessarily cascade into the next one. So it's a highly reliable system. To create this reliable system in an urban environment, you obviously can't have above-ground lines. And so they're in underground cables or underground butyl-filled oil pipelines for the 138 kV lines. And therefore, they're protected against wind, against vandalism. But because they're below ground, they can become saturated and vaults can become inundated. And as we saw with Hurricane Irene, the water was just coming over the seawall along the East River. And that was because we got a surge of about 3 to 4 feet, much smaller than had originally been anticipated. So we came dangerously close to having a higher surge. And of course, that surge happened to coincide with high tide. So you got the worst of all consequences. And we just ducked it. But clearly, that illustrates how narrowly close we came to having some significant power outages in New York City and the consequences of that with respect to business, restoration, and recovery. So this was a very close call and one that I think we all have to keep in mind. I was proud of the emergency response people in taking the steps that they did. And even though they evacuated people from areas that they may, in retrospect, not needed to have been evacuated from, one could never have predicted that 2 or 3 days out from the event.
If you could, just tick off other infrastructure you're concerned about. We know that, for instance, California, Southern California, doesn't have enough water, and it's brought in by pipelines, but those are vulnerable to rupturing because they cross earthquake fault lines. There's not a lot of storage space in Southern California. If they have a water outage, they don't have a place to really store it. So what's to be done?
Well, I think that people can provide for additional capacity in some of the facilities that cross the fault. We are perfectly able to design structures to survive fault displacements, provided that we are able to site them properly, have a backup plan for rapid restoration, so that they are able to sustain minimum damage. Some damage may be inevitable, but minimizing that damage so that the restoration times are down to a few days or a couple of weeks makes all the critical difference in terms of providing the water supply that's necessary after an event like that.
Well, Tom Roebuck, this all sounds wonderful, necessary, and extremely expensive. Where does the money come for this, especially now when you have a government that doesn't seem to, you know, lawmakers that don't seem to have the stomach for spending money? Now, there are economists like Robert Reich pushing President Obama to have an infrastructure repair program that would produce jobs. But, you know, we've got gridlock in Washington. So how does this happen, this repair of our infrastructure that you say is imperative?
Well, I would submit that we can't afford not to repair and harden critical infrastructure. And the reason for that is that as it degrades, it becomes less efficient. We are subject to additional and increasing missteps. And all of these have serious economic consequences. If you increase the time it takes to get people to their places of work in New York City because the bridge system and the subway system is inadequate for the number of people who want to work there, that has a direct impact on the economy of the United States and the New York City area. So reinvesting in infrastructure is essential for remaining competitive in an world environment.
You know, Professor O'Rourke, I could have guessed word for word how you were going to respond to that question, and it just seems like it sits as a political football right now. Tom O'Rourke, Professor of Civil and Environmental Engineering at Cornell University. Thanks so much, Professor, for speaking with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.